Remember when you loved what you did for a living and you got excited talking about it? The Portfolio Career Podcast is here to help you find that next project, next idea, or next friend. Host David Dubinsky will interview those that have optimized their careers for growth, resilience, and ultimately happiness. Tune in and let's have some fun. Hey friend, really excited for this Portfolio Career Podcast with Olive Persimmon. Olive's a recent TED Talk speaker. She talks about how she built a portfolio career around the spoken word. We go deep on her many projects and how she got there. She talks about different communication styles in the context of animals. Wonder which animal you are. Words and relationships all really matter, and Olive's an expert on these, and they are essential for you to grow and to develop your portfolio career. So really excited for you to check out this episode with Olive and let me know what you think. Welcome to a Portfolio Career Podcast. Your host, David Nabinski, is here with Olive Persimmon. How's it going, Olive?
That's me. Living my best life, David.
Let's start with the TED Talk.
Yeah,
and
cool.
What was that like? Why did you want to pursue that?
Yeah, so a few years ago, I moved to New York 7 years ago. And I left a nonprofit job, and I was really good at that nonprofit job, but it wasn't what I wanted to be doing. And so I started thinking about what I wanted to be doing. And really what I wanted to be doing boiled down to using words to create shit. and that's like a broad category, but I wanted to speak, and I wanted to write, and I wanted to perform. So that all falls under the category of using words to create shit. So I got really involved in my Toastmasters club. I joined a Toastmasters club and I gave free speeches everywhere, and I really loved speaking and I was really good at it. And I found out it was a way to deliver a message to your audience that they maybe needed.
Mm.
So like something would happen to me and I would write a speech about it. Whether it was like I went through a breakup or I lost my job, I would immediately write a speech about it. Sometimes they were funny. I had a speech once called Dating Makes You Fat, Broke, and Crazy. And sometimes they were more serious. And I would deliver these speeches and people would come up afterwards and they would be like, you know, I really needed to hear that. And so it gives you kind of like a sense of this message isn't just for me. It's not, you're not performing to hear your own voice. You know, you're doing it for a reason. And so in terms of speaking, I did a lot of speaking at my Toastmasters club. I did a lot of speaking at like, anytime someone was throwing like a free event, I'd be like, I'll speak. And I started getting a bit of a reputation for having a good message and being prepared. And so TED or TEDx is really kind of the next step if you want to level up and you want to deliver your message to a wider audience.
I watched it. It was very well done. It was also very wide ranging. Mm-hmm. And there was humor. There's also a lot of vulnerability.
Thank you.
And so I definitely encourage everybody to check it out. With speaking, that's a lot of time, but yeah, you don't necessarily get paid for that, right? Or are you currently making money off of that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have been paid to speak and I have been paid to perform, specifically spoken word. And I do teach public speaking professionally and I do teach classes professionally. So okay. In that sense, I do get paid. Am I getting like $10,000 gigs like, you know, Neil Gaiman, or $100,000 gigs like one of the Clintons? No. But I have been paid to do it.
Soon.
Yeah, from your lips to God's ears, as my bubble would say.
And obviously we live in New York City. You can't pay rent that way. How have you been able to spend time and develop that craft, but then also make a living and thrive here in New York as well?
Yeah. Oh my God. This is the question. This is the question, right? This is what your whole podcast is about. Okay. So in New York, when I first moved here, there were two stories that I was told. You can get a 9-to-5 and you can work on your shit after work, or you can quit your 9-to-5, freelance, and try to work on your shit full time. And I tried both of those, and neither one really worked for me. I had a 9-to-5, and I wasn't great at it, to be honest. And I failed at that 9-to-5, and I got another 9-to-5, and I also wasn't great at that 9-to-5. And I'd always been somebody who, I was like, I can be good at anything if I really try. But the reality was I didn't try because I didn't care. Mm. So I couldn't be fully in on it. So I wasn't great at that, and I left, and I tried freelancing full-time. And that was really hard, too, because you start worrying about how you're going to pay for stuff, and the fear of paying your rent is real. And when I was deciding what to do, so I'd been in corporate, I'd been in the freelance world, and I had a conversation with somebody I knew on the internet about whether or not I should go back to corporate America, whether or not I should try to be all in on my art and all in on speaking and writing. And she said to me, nothing is going to cripple your creativity more than worrying about paying your rent. She was like, so you got to figure out how to get your money situation under control and still make art. And she was like, and it doesn't you don't have to get a 9-to-5. And I was like, what? There are other options? So you can kind of finagle a solution that works for you. And that's what I did.
Okay. And how did you find that? And what is that?
Yeah. So I pay my rent a lot of different ways. And some of them involve words and what I love to do. And some of them don't. So I work part-time. I work 30 hours a week at a foundation for women with autism. That's my health insurance job. Mm. So it was very important to me that I had health insurance and I had some sort of stable income. Only because I'd been in the place where I didn't have that. It was not the place I wanted to be. It's very important to me to be generous, to be able to, you know, send people birthday gifts. And I'd been in the place where I was like, how am I going to pay my rent? And that's a terrible feeling. So I got a part-time job doing that, and I have health insurance. Then I also work part-time for a training company teaching presentation skills, public speaking. And so that's kind of fuels my soul a little bit. The training part, I get to teach something I love and I get to do something I love. And then I sold my second book. So I got paid to write that, which is amazing and wonderful. And then I have private clients in public speaking that I help with graduation speeches and acceptance speeches and things like that. So that's also kind of fueling the... And then, actually, wait. There was one point in time where I got paid to organize a very wealthy man's library. That was like my fifth job. I needed extra money. And I'd been his assistant for like 2 weeks when I was like trying to figure stuff out. He was like, hey, my library is a mess. Come over to my Central Park apartment and organize my library. And I thought it would be a one-day thing, and it ended up taking me like 6 months. So that was like my fifth job. So you can do it. There are lots of ways to make money.
And so, but that's always, it's always around words, mostly?
Not always. My job at the foundation, I do event planning and event coordination. So right now I'm planning our Harry Potter party.
Okay.
So it's still a cool job, and it's a job that still fulfills me. I still enjoy it. It's not my forever job, and it's not like how I define myself. If I met somebody at a party and they were like, what do you do?
Yeah, tell us.
I'd say, oh, I'm an author. I'm a writer and a speaker and a communication coach. And so I probably wouldn't even bring up that job, but it provides me a lot of really great stability, and I like it, and I like my colleagues, and this is the main component. Find a job that helps you pay your rent but doesn't suck your soul and your time, and that's a totally fine thing to do. And I was sold the story originally when I lived here that that wasn't fine. Like, you had to be all in on art.
And when did that change?
Well, when I left my corporate job and I was just broke, I was like, how do I do this?
Yeah. And has there been any key influences or mentors along the way that have really helped you get to where you are now?
Yeah, there have been a few. This woman I met on the internet who told me that, you know, you have to make sure that you're right with your finances. My dad, actually. My dad's like my biggest supporter. So my dad was always like the one who was like, yeah, write a book. And now his big idea, he's really like, we're going to write a TV show together. So we've been working on that. Yeah, because he's always been like, you can do whatever you want. And my mom's a little more practical. She's like, you can do whatever you want and figure out how to pay your rent. And health insurance is very important. So the influence of both of them has allowed me to create this kind of cool life where I have health insurance and also get to write and speak and teach.
Mm-hmm. What struggles do you have with the, sounds like, 4 to 5 different things that you're juggling? What's the hardest part?
One, you have to figure out the narrative you want to tell about yourself, right? So this goes like, I'm not going to go to a party and be like, oh yeah, and I do this, and I do this, and I do this, and I do this, and people get very confused. But also I think the biggest struggle is your time aligning with your priority? And sometimes the answer is no, and how do you reconcile that? Like, sometimes my day job takes up too much mental space, and I'm not writing my book. Or sometimes I have like a deadline on my book, and I'm like totally neglecting speaking. So I think that it's constantly a struggle when you have that much going on. Like, how are you prioritizing your time?
Right. Do you ever have to, like, completely readjust? What happens if one starts to veer too far? You know, like, it seems like you've really molded this together nicely. But have you ever had some difficulties in the past where you've had to rejigger the stack a little bit?
No, because I'm totally perfect. I'm just kidding. Yeah, of course, all the time. Like, all the time I'm adjusting. All the time. Like, I had to take a month off from training, from the training company I work with, to finish my book. And my day job is very flexible about hours. So there have been times where I've had to adjust my hours so that I could go to trainings. So yeah, I'm constantly adjusting. I'm not sure I even got it right. Like, I'm not saying I've figured it out. But yeah, it's always a work in progress, right?
Mm-hmm. If you were to go to and speak in front of students, math or in history, those are great. But I wish that you should really also focus on these types of skills more in your career. If you were to start your career over again and go to college, like, what would you?
I would say figure out what you want and relentlessly pursue that. Because I think a lot of times we look at what we think are options. So, for example, the option is 9 to 5 and the option is quit and be all in on art and work at Starbucks. And I think if somebody had told me, like, in the beginning, like, hey, you know, like, you can figure something else out. Just figure out what you want first, which for me was stability, but also health insurance, but also I didn't want to work 9 to 5, 40 hours a week. Mm-hmm. That would make things easier because I think a lot of people don't have a clear idea of what they actually want. So, like, figure out what you want, relentlessly pursue that, accept that there's a learning curve. Mm-hmm. And you might, like, fuck it up sometimes, and that's okay. It's not the end of things. And then I guess the other thing that's most helpful is just, this is for life, I would say. Not only in my careers, but in everything. Compassionate communication. Mm. I teach communication. Everything I like to do involves communication. And that's because I believe communication is, like, fundamentally the most important skill that anybody can have. The ability to communicate with people, the ability to communicate what you want and need, the ability to communicate when something's not what you want and need. So, communication.
Yeah, and how do we improve that? You know, especially these days where I feel like there's so many different channels, right? There's people are sliding into your DM and they're messaging you there, or like...
You just said sliding into your DM.
You know, there's email, there's, you know, Facebook Messenger outreach. Like, it just feels like there's all these different new communication styles that are not... Culture hasn't really picked up to them. You know, it's like, yeah, some people have different approaches, and like, how do you feel like you're proficient at all of them, or how can you get better at them?
Better at communication or better at different communication styles?
Better at different communication styles.
Oh, I think that's easy. I would just say, what's the best way to communicate with you?
Okay.
So I would just ask somebody, like, flat out. For me, email is not a good way to communicate with me. I'm slow at it. I neglect it. I forget about it. I'm kind of flaky. So I would just ask people, like, what's the best way to communicate with you? And then the other thing about communication, the most helpful thing I think I've ever learned is there are predominantly 4 communication styles. Mm. And there are tests you can take online. It's based on some, like, old school psychology. And once you figure out how you communicate and how people communicate differently from you, it's a game changer.
Can we talk about those 4?
Yeah, totally, totally. So I learned this at my last company. I'll use their terminology, but there's different terminology across the board. I'll use bird terminology. Is it okay?
Sure.
Because this helps, like, visualize it. So there's the eagle. Eagle is somebody who is, like, action-oriented. They're direct. You can identify them because they say the words, like, I think we should do. They speak really quickly and fast, and they're very, like, focused on what's going to be done. There's the dove. The dove is somebody who is focused on fairness. They speak a little slower. They are interested in equality, and they value relationships over action, whereas, like, the eagle is going to value action over relationships. There's the owl. So exactly like you think of an owl. Like, they value details and facts and rules. They're going to speak a little slower. And then there's what I am, which is the peacock. And makes sense, you know me, right? The peacocks are the storytellers and the performers, and they value relationships, and they're going to speak quickly. They're less concerned about, like, line 13 on the spreadsheet. They're probably going to mess it up. The relevancy is, once I learned that I was, quote-unquote, a peacock, I used to have a lot of problems with somebody who was an eagle. So there was somebody in a club I was in, and the problem was she was a rule follower. She valued rules. And before I knew this, before I understood communication, I was like, ah, she's such a stick in the mud, and she's in her head, and she puts, like, all this placement on rules, and, like, I don't care about rules. And the minute I understood that that was something she valued and needed, and that was how she communicated, I just started following the easy rules for me. Mm. Like, I'm a rule breaker, So the peacock is a rule breaker. But I was breaking some rules that I didn't need to break. And once I understood that we could communicate better if I gave her the details, if I showed up on time, if I told her that I had thought about the rules and that I was like complying with XYZ rule, but I was breaking XYZ rule because of this, our entire relationship changed, right? Or same thing, I have a friend who's a high eagle. I'll use the
term. High eagle.
He's a very high eagle. I have a lot of friends who are high eagles. And when I first met him, I thought he was arrogant and rude and bullish, and he didn't care about like people. And once I learned that he was just an eagle, I understood what he needed from me in order for our relationship to work. So instead of trying to make small chat with him for 15 minutes, which is what peacocks would do, mm-hmm. right? The peacock needs that. So if you're having a podcast with a peacock, we need that like 15 minutes of like, I'm settling in, I'm talking about our day, you're talking about this. If you're with an eagle, they're like, let's get started. Yep. And once I understood that he was an eagle, I'd be like, oh, hey, how are you? Like, let's get started. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
Did I just rant about that?
No,
fascinating.
Yeah.
It's a game changer once you understand that people communicate differently and you can adapt to how they communicate in a way that doesn't compromise your authenticity.
Is that kind of the lens that you, when you meet new people, are you trying to at least understand where they're coming from quickly so that you can...
Not always. I wouldn't say I'm immediately assessing, but it helps me be more compassionate to people who like I would have originally written off as... you know, bullish or like rule followers or somebody who's considered a dove, they're not going to speak up as much typically. Mm-hmm. So if I'm in a leadership position, I want to be able to give the dove like a space to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives me an opportunity to be like, oh, I haven't heard from you.
Yeah.
And it just changes the dynamics and the way that you speak with people.
Okay.
This is not what your podcast is about
is fascinating. This is all part of it, right?
Okay,
so
cool.
Relationships and understanding them then can lead to business, obviously. Like,
well, I think communication is the cornerstone of everything. Like if you cannot communicate, you cannot get opportunities for business. If you cannot communicate, you can't switch jobs. If you can't communicate, you can't sell things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think communication is like the cornerstone for pretty much everything. I'm obviously biased. Obviously very biased.
And you communicated a story at TED.
Yes.
You talk a lot about making art. So obviously that was art.
Yeah.
What's next after that?
Oh my gosh.
I know. I mean, we live in New York City, right? That's what it's all about. You do one thing and then people like, okay, that's great. Like, now what?
Yeah. My book's coming out. It's called The Coitus Chronicles, by the way. Is coming out a week before Valentine's Day of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really going to push a heavy marketing push So I got to finish writing the book right now. It's in the second round of edits. And then I'm really going to focus on just getting myself out there. So whether that's like Facebook Live, whether that's speaking more, and I passionately love speaking, so it's fun for me. Whether that's performing spoken word, just being...
Like this, yeah.
Yeah, like this, totally.
What were your motivations behind the book?
My second book or my first book?
The second one.
And the second book, I was at... Okay, the second book is a little bit... it's about sex, which is an interesting topic. And I have always had an inherent discomfort with sexuality.
Mm.
And that's kind of why I wrote it. I was at a party and a bunch of people were talking about like sexuality and sex. And I was in like a very long dry spell at that point. And one of the people at the party was like, you look overtly uncomfortable. And I was like, no, I don't. She was like, yes, you do. And I was like, I don't have a problem with sexuality. And I did. Because I was in like a serious dry spell. I hadn't been in an intimate relationship in a long time. I hadn't been in a real relationship in years. And one of my friends was like, this should be your next book. Like you should write about this. Like it's obviously something that's affecting your life and it would help a lot of people.
Mm.
And the more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? This would be a really, not only just a fascinating book, but it might just save me from myself. Like I never wanted to be a sex writer. Like, I never wanted to be somebody who wrote romance novels or wrote about sex. It's really hard putting your dirty laundry in the public eye. It's really, really hard. But it was a problem. I was having, like, real problems with intimacy and connection and communication and what I wanted and desire. And so for me, the book was more a journey of, like, saving my own life in some ways. And sharing it because I fundamentally believe that sharing your message helps other people. That's why I give speeches. That's why I write. Like, other people are probably going through what you're going through, and then they get to read it and feel a little less alone.
And that's a lot of your motivations?
Yeah, I'd say that's one of my main motivations. Help people feel a little less lonely in their journey. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. When did that start? Was that when you were in high school and growing up? Did you kind of already start to feel that way, or...?
I started speaking because I had come out of acting. So I started acting when I was like 8 years old, and I loved acting. I loved performing.
8 years old?
8 years old. I was in a show every season, and I loved acting. And then I discovered our debate club, and I realized that you could perform, but you could deliver a message as you. Mm. And so speaking is acting combined with writing. Like, you get to write what you want to say. And I thought that was so cool. And when I started out, it was very self-serving. Like, it was the actress in me, like, wanted to perform. And then my first job out of college, I had to give a speech about, I worked for a nonprofit for that helped people who lived in very intense poverty. And they needed somebody to go and talk to corporations about our nonprofit in order to do fundraising. And they were like, oh, Olive has a lot of free time, like, send her. Because I was right out of college. Everybody else was busy, like, doing actual work.
Right.
And they were like, okay, just go ahead. Like, and I went and I gave a speech about someone I had met through a nonprofit who was one of the loveliest people I'd ever met, fourth generation of poverty. And it's weird. When I was speaking, I felt like I was... It's like you're serving your heart on a platter. And seeing people's reactions to that, not only did they donate, but also seeing, like, how important it was for me to share this story for my friend who fourth generation of poverty couldn't be there. I was just like, this is it. This is what I was meant to do. Yeah, it was really, really, it's some really cool. I've also bombed a bunch of speeches too. I'm making it sound like it's all romantic and like rainbows and butterflies. Like,
so what's that like when you bomb?
Oh my God, it's terrible. Terrible. Because first time I bombed, same job, I was at a law firm and they were really sitting too close to me. So they were like 5 feet away from me. It was like, it was, just, but no, like, imagine an entire row, it was all men, an entire row of just men with their elbows crossed, not smiling, like, staring at you. I was 22 at the time, 22 or 23, wearing a suit that was, like, too big for me and, like, too hot. I go and I start speaking and their facial affect is, just does not change. And I start stuttering a little. And then when I feel any sort of thing, whether it's embarrassment or passion or excitement, I start getting red. So I started getting just tomato red. And then, of course, you're obsessing about being red. Then I'm stuttering some more. And I leave, and I'm probably, like, the color of, like, a bright red tomato. And it's terrible. You want to, like, hide under it. You want to, like, crawl into the bathroom. And it still happens to me sometimes. I've given hundreds of speeches, and I still sometimes...
Even after you think you built up resilience, you still... Like, how do you bounce back? Like, what do you... Next morning, how do you bounce back?
Yeah, I had to do this with my book too, because getting a book published is a lot of rejection. Something my dad told me when I was young, I think about this all the time. He was a golfer. He would always say, you can't let one bad swing ruin your whole game. So he was like, people in golf fail because they let one bad swing get in their head and it ruins the whole game. So I do that with speaking, and I do that with writing, and I do that with rejection. I'm like, ah, you know what, that was my one bad swing. And like, now I'll be fine.
And so, and I guess when you're coming from such the heart of... It's to share a message to help other people. That probably motivates you a lot more, right? You have the ability to then bounce back to then help other people, right? You're not, it's not like you're waking up and then going to work and saying, oh, well, I really want to sell this widget for X amount of money.
Yeah. In my Toastmasters club once, there was a guy, he was a really talented speaker, but he never volunteered to speak. And one day I asked him and he was like, I don't want to take like other people's spots. And he thought he was being selfless by giving other people the opportunity to speak. And I told him, I was like, I always volunteer because I was like, you have a message. Like, people need to hear what you have to say. And he was like, you think of it like that? And I was like, of course I think of it like that. You have something worth saying. And I really believe this is my gift. Like, I don't think I'm great at everything. Like, if you were like, tell me about mathematical calculus, like whatever, I'd be like, I am not your person. I have no idea. But speaking is really... something I love, and I feel like it is, it's important that people hear what you have to say.
Yeah. Is there anything else that that we haven't talked about that we should?
No, I think we covered it. I mean, I only got so much time. No, that pretty much covers everything. We talked about books, speaking. Yeah, I ain't doing anything else.
How can we support you?
Yeah, people can check out my website. It's olivepersimmon.com, so just my name.com. There's plenty of cool resources on there. There's sexy resources, but there's also just blogs, stuff that I write about, videos. So, yeah.
Great.
Cool.
Well, Olive, I want to say thank you so much for your time. I've had a blast. I learned a lot. And
No, thanks for having me. This was great.
Yeah. Sweet.
All right.